You know, I mean, it's been since, what, April or May? It's been a really long time.
Well, Michelle, the high-tech girl, how are you doing with your Pokemon Go?
No, thank you. Not doing it. Are you? Tell me you haven't downloaded
it. I tried
it
once. I tried it just to see what it's like.
Uh-huh.
But it's, you know, it's not that interesting to me.
The girls did it. The two younger, Julia lost interest in it. Of course, you know, she's like grown and has a job. But Jillian played it for a while, maybe a couple weeks. Her and her friends and stuff, they would go on, literally, like, go on adventures with this thing. It was unbelievable.
Well, the world's losing interest in it. It's actually starting to really tail off.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Michelle, well, we're here to do Halt and Catch Fire.
I know. It's back.
Many, many weeks off of being together with our podcast, so it's good to have you back.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back.
This is season 3 of Halt and Catch Fire. Michelle, did you like this episode?
Episode 1, yes, I did. I loved it, as a matter of fact. I thought it was, I wasn't sure how they were going to come back, of course, and they just, I don't know. There was not a lot of unanswered questions. There wasn't a lot of things that I wondered about that they didn't address, even just in this first episode. So I appreciate that as a viewer. So yes, and beyond that, I mean, Joe and Boz. I mean, Boz stole the show in this.
He played pretty true to form. I didn't like it at first. My first watch, I was like, "Ah, this crap again with these idiots in this room throwing firecrackers at each other and teasing each other." And I was just like, "I don't want to see this shit all over again."
Right.
But on the second, on the rewatch, I really liked it a lot more.
Yeah, that part has always annoyed me, but I appreciate the fact that they show that it annoys like Gordon and it annoys Ryan, the new guy, and it annoys Boz. And I think it even annoys Donna a little bit. So they're showing that it annoys the smart people. And not that they're not all smart, because they're obviously genius in one way. But it annoys the more mature people, I guess. So they show that again and again, so it doesn't bother me so much that they do it, because they show the annoyance with it.
If there's any one way, one place where they overplay their hand a little bit, I think it's in that aspect of it. Like, oh, we're wacky coders. We're immature. We do all kinds of wacky, crazy stuff, like throw live fireworks inside a closed room.
Right. Right. Do you think that's true to form at all?
Probably. But, I mean, we get it. We know that they're not, you know, pressed suit, you know, suit, starch suit workers. They're like wacky hacker inventor type dudes.
Well, right. And also a little bit of time's passed, not a lot, but a little bit. But these guys are not just out of high school anymore. You know, they've like uprooted and relocated and they're getting older, and at least by a little bit. And I would hope that that's reflected at some point.
Yeah, were you able to put a timestamp on this?
It was like a little over a year, right?
What year in life, though, is it?
It's 1986. They actually showed that to us as it was coming on.
Okay.
And I think we ended like in the middle of 84, if I'm not mistaken.
Because when they booted up the server, it was 1/1/1980. Like computers do sometimes, I guess, when they first boot up, it had the wrong date.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
I think it was 1980, yeah. But it's not 1980. It's like middle of the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. As it was first coming on and they were showing the city, they said it had like a big 1986 to let us know that some time had passed. And plus, you know, Boz's son had just gotten married in the old one, and he just had a baby in this one. So they gave us some clues, even though they actually told us to. So,
So this series is better now than it was, I think, in season one. Having Donna and Cameron as the leads and Joe is not really the lead anymore. That's what saved this whole series, I think. And it looks like this season, too, it's going to be Donna and Cameron who are really the leads.
I like Donna more and more. They have really developed that character. Cameron has never been my favorite because she's always been so immature, and I put her in that group with the goof troop, I call them, the kids playing around. But she seems to really be coming along, although she's still doing some things that we'll talk about that are a little questionable. But
so it starts out with this, it's some sort of a party. I guess it's you could call it a press release party, although there's only one guy there from the media.
Right.
Just kind of a celebration of, like, welcome to California. We're starting up fresh, I guess.
Well, it's their Independence Day is how they put it, because they have their own server. They're on their own server. That's what Joe and Gordon and Donna are downstairs working on, getting that up and running. So they're not dependent on anybody else, which is really the reason they went to California to begin with.
So I wonder why they did invite that guy to come to this before the server was even up.
Well, surely they did it a couple of weeks prior. You know, it wasn't something that they just put together like the day before or whatever. And thinking that they'd have it done and then, you know, tech problems or something, I would guess.
Well, that was...
What'd you think about Boz singing?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Boz singing some Sinatra. Not really too badly.
He
was.
No!
He had the open collar and the drink in his hand, too. He was really playing the part.
He really was. I like that. I like that. I think his character I'm liking more and more. And I love his emotion and his, I don't know, his dedication and everything. They've kind of taken him away from being so much this just, you know, rowdy, redneck, kind of middle-aged guy into something maybe a little deeper, but maybe...
He's still a rowdy redneck Texas guy, though.
Well, yeah.
So Cameron addresses the crowd. The crowd is what? It's the employees plus one reporter with fireworks. Then Donna comes in and says, gives a little bit of a speech. They have 100,000 users. Boz is a grandfather. And then this guy Ross, somebody from InfoWorld, is there to see, like, oh, maybe you're not quite ready to do this server party or this server boot up with me here.
Yeah, everybody gives them grief. Everybody. But
they get it running, and then Gordon later sees mockery from the employees, like, underneath in the server room or in the party, kind of behind the scenes. He hears the derision from the two guys.
Yeah, that was kind of sad. It hurt his feelings, you could tell.
He's not really... He's a second-tier player in this story.
Gordon?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. He is. He definitely had a bigger role, I think, last year, or so far. But he's really interesting, and I think he makes Donna a more interesting character. Because if we just saw sweet Donna, you know, going about her business with Cameron without her whole backstory or, you know, side story, I guess, of Gordon and her children and everything that she has to deal with, I don't think her character would be as rich. So I think he's a great supporting character in that way. And how sorry do you feel for Gordon?
Yeah, he's a drifting soul. He's probably short for this world, too, with his medical, still got those medical problems.
Yeah, and I think he's, like, asking for validation and for, I think he feels unwanted, and it makes me feel really, really bad for him. But
so we get to the credits and some commercials. There's a pretty cool commercial on my end. I saw the shot on the iPhone commercial with Maya Angelou's poem, the Human Family poem.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's pretty cool. It's just shots of people all over the world, and her poem is being read in the background. And we come back, and it's breakfast with the family, and the family now is Cameron bunking up with the Gordon family. Pretty sick combo there.
Yeah.
They see the article. This has to be a few days later, I don't know, maybe it got printed that night, but the article is bad news about the company. They're only a quarter the size of CompuServe, which seems to be pretty damn big.
That's what I thought, because CompuServe in the mid-80s was a big deal, right? And I thought that was pretty good, considering they've only been out there a year or so.
And they're going to go under by 1988, which I guess is another time clue that if it's 1986 or 7, that they don't have much time, 2 years.
Right.
And then the earthquake hits. Michelle, did this earthquake scare you?
It would have had I been there. Yeah. Yeah, that's scary stuff to me, living in Tennessee.
That wasn't much of an earthquake, though.
Well, like, it was enough to freak them out.
It jiggled the glass off the table, and you could feel the vibrations. But, I mean, there are earthquakes where, like, televisions fly off the wall. So it was a minor earthquake. But it scared them and scared Cameron.
Yeah, and... Yeah, that was one of the things, like, she's almost like their child, kind of, you know? I mean, they're, like, telling her kind of what to do, you know, go away and that kind of thing. And she's asking them what to do in that situation. And I don't picture her being a whole lot different in age from Donna. But she seems, I mean, she's bunking with the girls, it looks like.
Yeah, and she's the third daughter.
Yeah.
So they had a pretty cute scene next of the avatars. Donna and Cameron are the two avatars. That was pretty straight through. I could read them being just that one was Donna, one was Cameron.
They have really advanced, right? That was not how we ended last time. And they have really put some resources and time into these avatars. And that stuff was a big deal, I'm sure, back then. I didn't even have a computer in 86. But back then, I can imagine that was probably pretty cutting edge, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was different. It's pretty crappy now. But I think they're trying to teach us a lesson here. A really good exposition, I think, because they say that chat room's really dead. And Cameron says, well, it's like Tuesday at 9 a.m. or something. But what they do then is they say, well, let's go look at Comic Book Corner. There's people in there. So they're telling us that there are different rooms, and some people are in, a lot of people in one room and nobody in another room.
Right.
So there's a distinguishing of chat rooms. As people have preferences online, they're starting to go to different specific preferences.
Right.
Now we learn that Cameron knows all the chats. She knows all the avatars and the chats, and she knows, like, really specific details. She's been listening in and hacking in and just behind the scenes listening to people's conversations.
Yeah, the private stuff. And that's against their policy, we find out.
So, and then at one point, the avatars of Cameron and Donna reach the end of the world. The graphics just kind of crumble off, and they confront the abyss. It's pretty symbolic. Like, Cameron and Donna are literally at the end of the world. It's almost like they're laying the railroad track down in front of the charging train as this company moves forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great analogy.
And we meet this new guy next, Ryan. He has ideas for isolating the chat community into those multiple rooms. Like, he's got it pinned down. He sees the future. He wants to make more rooms to fit those multiple user desires so people can go into more specific rooms. And if you think about, like, CompuServe and AOL, there were millions of different rooms you could go into.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he also wants to fix the holes in security that he walks right into to see, you know, he printed out all those chats, and that's exactly what Cameron was doing.
Right.
And he's interesting. I like this character. He's one of those brilliant guys whose ideas kind of can't find their way out of their head via words. He misses all the social cues, and he just barges ahead with his ideas and his genius.
Right.
And they sit there, you know, Cameron and Donna sit there with their heads kind of spinning.
I was disappointed in Cameron right there. I was disappointed in the character. That's not the Cameron we knew before. Cameron before was really open and receptive to even the most boring and vague ideas that the Goof Troop was constantly telling her. And then she has this guy who's taken this initiative to come in and has all this stuff planned up. Donna, not so much. She's pretty much the same. But Cameron just not only had no interest in it, but, I mean, she just shuts him down. And, like, And then, you know, kind of pays him to be quiet, sort of.
Well, she's threatened because he's found out that somebody's hacked into the rooms, and that's her. So she wants, like, she wants to clear her throat, like, oh, great, thanks very much, I'll leave the room now. He wants him to stop talking because she doesn't know how far he's going to reveal that it's her, I think. But eventually, I think this guy Ryan is going to be the connection between Joe and Mutiny and how they all bond together, whatever connection they end up making together.
Yeah.
This guy's the good new liaison. We're starting to see some of these people, the younger versions of themselves, too. Ryan is clearly a younger version of both Cameron and Gordon, I think. Kind of smart and creative. Anyway, we'll see more. We'll hear more from him.
Yeah, absolutely. I pictured him more like a Gordon protege, but I definitely see that since you said it, because he's so scattered. That scattered genius, like Cameron as well.
So Gordon works in the basement of this. It looks like a basement. It's underneath the main office, a server room. Mm-hmm. And dust is leaking down, and probably water and drips and tangled wires. And, you know, server rooms are like sterile environments nowadays. So to see this is like cringeworthy.
Oh, yeah.
And they're, you know, they're in San Francisco, where there's going to be vibrations and earthquakes, and who knows what's going to happen to that server.
Well, and those people upstairs, it's not like they're a calm bunch. I mean, you could have river dancing on the floor above them that wouldn't make as much noise as and chaos as those guys do.
Yeah, so we saw, I forgot to say it, when we came into this, we saw some ads from Are You Safe ad on the billboards of San Francisco. Pretty cool shots of San Francisco as the camera zoomed in around the city. The Transamerica Tower and the hills, and just pretty cool. Like, it felt like a new feeling. Like, there was a new energy. Like, they're in a new place, a new part of the world. And but we did see that big billboard of the "Are You Safe?" Joe's ad. Are you safe?
Well, right. And it also looked like one of those light-up billboards. I'm not sure if it was, but it kind of looked like it was. And that would have been more cutting edge back then, and also his full page ads in the paper and stuff. I mean, everything about it was very very new and very over the top, which is pretty standard, I guess, for Joe.
So in this server room, there's an Are You Safe ad on the newspaper, and that pops up, and Gordon talks to the team, and we learn that he's suing Joe for taking his idea and creating Macmillan security with it.
Right. What do you think about that?
I think we're still learning what to think of. Like, how much did he really take, and how much? I mean, we see him offer Gordon part of the company coming up, and I have questions about that too. But
me too.
What do you mean? What do you think?
I mean, do you think Gordon has a right to this, to the money, to part of it? Do you think he has a right? I mean, you know, anybody can sue, but do you think he has, do you think it's a good lawsuit? Do you think
he has a right to think he does? He didn't do anything with it. I know those guys were asking good questions. We'll get to that scene. I don't know if it's this episode or the next one, but when they're talking to the lawyers, were you there as a friend or were you there as a business person?
Right.
That, I mean, he has a right to think that it's his idea. I don't know how much merit in court he would actually win a lawsuit.
I don't know. I don't know, though. But that's an interesting little side note, I think. We'll talk about it when we get there.
I think you nailed it a minute ago when you said Gordon's trying to find essentially his meaning in life, his place in life. Because Joe offers him, I'll work on this with you, and he says no to it. So what does he really want? Does he just want recognition? Like, hey, that Gordon, you're a good guy. You created this smart thing. We give you credit for it. Is that all he wants? You know, I don't know. That's maybe Gordon doesn't even know what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if Joe had asked again, he would have maybe accepted. I just don't think Joe or Gordon trusts Joe. But I don't think he trusts anybody. I don't think he trusts Donna. There's these different situations that come up, and I'll try to point them out when they come up, that he just seems like he needs some validation.
Well, when we get to that scene, I think I kind of believe that Joe made that offer knowing that Gordon would turn it down, and so he could just say, aha, now we all know what you really don't want or what you do want, even though that's a
but
little.
But why do it there?
I don't know.
Because, see, I kind of thought the same thing, too. But why do it there? Because doing it in front of these people doesn't mean anything. That's not part of anything. I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, maybe we don't even know that after the second episode yet. I think it's a, yeah. I think it's a good question to have prompted by the writers and the viewers that, like, wow, I wonder what this is. What does this all mean? What is the meaning of this?
Yeah. Right.
So what else? So Gordon and Bosworth now talk, and it's right as if Bosworth is back at Cardiff. He's got his horses on the painting on the wall. He's just like the same guy. I mean, he was just really right back to where he was when he was in his stride at Cardiff in Texas. Gordon needs investment to fix the mainframe room, and Bosworth says, yeah, no problem. We'll get it taken care of. And then Gordon asks him, how do you do it? And he leaves it open-ended, like, how do you deal with these animals in the mutiny zoo, this nonsense of all these crazy kids working?
Right.
Or the queens of the jungle, that's a different story, and I just stay out of their way. So Bosworth, I think he answers the more meaningful way. It's like, I just stay out of their way. The queens of the jungle are, of course, Donna and Cameron, and he lets them run the show. And then Joe calls and wishes Bosworth congratulations for his grandson. So there's a couple mysteries here, Michelle. Like, we'll learn, like, Bosworth calls his son to talk about the grandson. He doesn't even know the grandson's name.
Right.
So these people have some personal drift issues in life. They're just, like, some mysteries in their lives that are, like, unsettling. Gordon and Bosworth, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens with them.
Yeah.
But we go to
that conversation. Do you think he was... Okay, first of all, how did Joe even know? Because we come up on that in a little bit where we find out Boz is asking Cameron if she told anybody, which means Joe, of course, or anybody that Joe would know, and she didn't. And why would he call him? Was it just to connect? Was it to show he's still there? Was it to poke at him? Was it just so to keep his voice fresh and in Boz's mind, to keep his, you know, to keep their mind on Joe? I don't think they're going to forget him. That was a really curious phone call. And
well, one thing after both these episodes, this question is still in my mind, is like, what is Joe really after? And I think that's a little part of it. Like, why is he connecting with Bosworth? Why is he connecting with, you know, he connects a little bit with Ryan and it kind of leaves him cold. And then it connects, of course, with Gordon and leaves him cold, but that transaction kind of goes the way I think Joe wanted it to go, even though he got turned down.
I'm not sure.
But yeah, there's a couple mysteries floating around that are interesting. They're good. It's a good opening start to the season because it's like, okay, I want to find out now what's going on here.
Right.
So he congratulates him. So now next scene, there's a meeting at the school. Donna has to go in with Gordon because Joni was in a fight with another kid. And they meet the other kid's mom. And
okay, but just before that, Gordon says that once he gets the mainframe solid, he's thinking about leaving. And I don't think Gordon wants to leave, do you? I think he just wanted Donna to say, no, we need you. We want you here. But she acts like, you know, I mean, she's kind of taken aback. And that little tiny scene right there before we meet Jennifer's mom, Diana, that was really, I felt like it was a really important scene because Gordon brings this up in a hallway of the kids' school. I mean, we're going to assume they rode together there and whatever. And there's no time to have this conversation, but he brings it up right then. And my only take on that is that he would have to just want Donna to go, oh no, Gordon, we need you. You can't leave. And she doesn't.
Yeah. But I don't think Gordon wants to be there. Gordon doesn't want to be second banana in Donna's company. He's looking for meaning in his life, and he doesn't know what it is, and he's masking it with his drugs and his drinking. and he's, you know, he's like worried about his health. He's looking for something that he's not finding the answers to, and he knows that answer is not in mutiny. He never wanted to be in mutiny. Donna held a gun to his head to come out to California, or our marriage is over.
Right. Yeah, I don't know that he wants to be there, but I think he wants Donna to want him. And I think he just feels that was one of those not feeling wanted moments.
Partly, maybe. But I think there's something more meaningful. I mean, that's meaningful between a couple, but for the story, the purposes of the saga, I think there's something more that Gordon needs that he's not getting.
Sure, sure. But why bring that up right then when there's no possibility of having a decent conversation about it?
I don't know. Well, okay. They go to the school. They meet the other kid's mom, who's going to turn out to be the investor mom, Diane. And she tells them right away her kid is mad because they're getting divorced. That was pretty immediate exposition from one parent to another. My kid's just mad because I'm getting divorced. And she apologizes to Donna. And then Gordon reflects for a minute on this divorce comment. They show his face and pauses for a couple seconds just on Gordon thinking about this.
Rob.
You know, maybe there's some meaning to him in this, that there's more to life than just what I want. Maybe I got to think about what's going to happen to my kids if I don't pay more attention to them. Or, I mean, he reflects on this. I don't know exactly what it means, but they make a point of showing him thinking.
Right.
All right, now we see Cameron hacking the chats back at Mutiny. She sets up a meeting with some guy to exchange joysticks for, we find out, this guy whose son has died, and he's giving away his computer parts, or exchanging them. So a couple messages there. First is that she physically has to go and meet with the guy to do the deal. But secondly, that she's hacking in and she knows specifics about his son having passed away. And then before she leaves, she tells Bosworth to give Ryan a raise to keep him happy.
Yeah. What did you think about that? Did you think that was pay him to be quiet, just to keep him there?
Yeah, partly. Partly to keep him quiet, keep him pacified, partly to keep a smart employee there. Like, she could tell he was jumping out of his skin to tell everybody his ideas, and they didn't listen to him very closely. So give him a little raise. Keep him, you know, keep him happy for a while.
Yeah.
So Ryan, we show Ryan now working through lunch. And as he's working, one side of his page is code and the other side is his manic scribbling of the ideas for the chat community.
Yep.
Pretty interesting meld of those two things. He has to take that wild scribbling and actually make it into code. And if you can do that, if you can be that genius coder, like academic type person plus creative, that's a super positive combination, powerful
plus
combination.
Very Cameron-esque from season one.
So he opens up InfoWorld, sees Joe's ad. Seen Joe's ad like 3 or 4 times now. And then Donna and the mom, Diane, meet in the bathroom. And the mom just like changing her clothes to go run right from the meeting to run 10 miles probably. And she says, I like that our girls are fighters. Pretty alpha type mom there.
Yeah, she is. I mean, she's just, Donna makes the comment about, maybe we can have Jennifer over. And she's like, well, that'd be odd. They don't like each other. I mean, she's just real blunt and matter of fact about things in life, I think.
And then while that's happening, Gordon is talking with Joni about how she hates California.
Yeah.
And then he's really talking to himself because he says, it's really hard, but we have to commit to change to make it really work. And I think he's really talking to himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Gordon, he does this a couple times with Joni, and I think that he's really, exactly like you just said, he's trying to convince her as he tries to convince himself of the same things.
So Cameron meets that dad with the joysticks, and they talk about the chat rooms, and Cameron knows too much right away. The guy knows that she knows too much, that the guy's son was a 49ers fan. There's no way she could know that. And he catches her in all of her doublespeak, and she leaves kind of embarrassed that she's caught.
Yeah, what was that scene all about, do you think? Why do you think they showed us that.
Well, I think because, like I said, they had to physically meet to go do the deal. It couldn't be done like eBay. And then the guy was on to her. You know, he knew that she. I think some of these expositions have to be shown a couple times for people to really get it.
Sure.
That you know, there's no way you could have known this. How did you do this? We didn't really get that from the printout that Ryan had. And no. It was a very personal thing. I mean, guy's son died, and she knew. I mean, how much more personal could you invade of a conversation?
Sure. That was, I kind of thought that scene was going to make her go back and take Ryan more seriously. And the scene right before that we kind of skipped over because it was really, really quick, but was where Ryan was meeting with Boz when Boz was giving him the raise. And he's like, I didn't ask for more money. He wanted just to be listened to. He wants to get, like you were saying earlier, on this train. And he's not being listened to. And I thought that this very next scene was going to make Cameron listen to him. And, you know, as we see, it doesn't.
Yeah. I kind of forget where I put it in. But I think it's perfect consumer profiling. Like, a company probably does this. They probably look at the chats, even though they're supposed to be private, to see what are these people talking about? What could we do to make our company better, to serve our customers better? So when Donna kind of says, well, this is against our policy, I mean, that's kind of bullshit. I think companies probably really do look at every little piece of data that they can to get an edge on what their consumers want. And I almost don't blame them for doing that. But it's stupid of Donna to go out and, like, reveal that she's learned this about this guy's son.
Cameron, yeah.
Cameron.
I've never thought about that. That's a real interesting kind of situation there, isn't it? Because they write it into their policy, but then they violate their own policy. And I've never thought about...
Well, that's how Ryan learns and is scribbling on that whiteboard. It's not just security. It's like, hey, we need more rooms. We need more specific rooms because, look, these people want to talk about death, and they want to talk about comic books, and they want to talk about trading joysticks. And, I mean, now what better way to learn it than by just listening in?
Sure.
All right, I jumped around looking for where I had that put, so that's going to come up again. But so, Michelle, your goof troop works late into the night. These guys work in the evenings, too, and they're adding visual and GIFs/GIFs to chat. Uh-huh. They call Gordon Jordan because of the G. Yeah. And he offers them beer to make it through the long night. His seasoned, hardworking technical experience. This is what you do. You crack open a beer to make it through the hard night.
Yeah, the beer and then the caffeine, right? Isn't that what they were doing, like mixing beer and caffeine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they offer him pot.
Right.
So he's found a new, or probably not new to him, because we see later on they talk about being in Berkeley. But he jumps right back in and accepts their offer of the pot.
He sure does.
So Boz now has his own goof troop at the bar. He's telling some extended stupid joke, pretty bad joke. I only had to hear part of the punchline to tell you that was probably a bad joke.
Right. They do that a lot in this. They give us like the very end of these like middle-aged men group things where they're just telling us the very punchline of these jokes. We see that a few times, and it's always so bad. And then the whole group just, you know, falls apart cackling. And I was thinking about that, particularly during this one. It was like, you know how you'll go to a comedian, go to see a comedian, and at first it's like, you know, little laughs, and then the laughs build over time. So by the end, everything's funny. Just, I think, because you're in the mode of laughter. And I have to assume that's what they're trying to show us here, because what they're saying is so ridiculous. And the horse laughs that we're getting kind of tells us that it's been going on for a while, that this is like the end of Boz's stand-up comedy routine in place of the beginning. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's how a dinosaur masturbates, or whatever he says. Something really is. That's all you need to hear to roll your eyes and go, "Oh, Jesus!"
Right. But
I think it was more comment on Boz than it was on the comedy clubs. Like, you're right about a comedy club. You're just ready to laugh. You'd laugh at stuff you wouldn't normally laugh at. I mean, that would probably kill in a comedy club if you told a joke like that. But here, Boz is in like a lounge somewhere having whiskey with these guys. I think it's a comment on his ability to stand up in front of a room and be the entertainer.
That, and also, it's always a group of men. We saw it in last season when Boz left Mutiny for a very short period of time and went to work at that job that his son got him. He was doing the exact same thing. He was telling the end of a joke, and everybody's just hee-haw laughing. And it's also, I think, kind of a commentary on that this is still a man's game. And I think we see that just a little bit more in these episodes. How Donna and Cameron feel sort of, you know, fish out of water being females doing
yeah.
this.
That's a good point. That does happen. And but also Bosworth's role as kind of a moderator, like, hey, I can solve any crowd's problems. Like, I'll settle confrontations between two people, or I'll entertain 10 people. He's kind of the part of the company that smooths things over. And I think that we're kind of reminded of him doing this. He did that somewhat in season one before he got in trouble and had to go to jail and all that.
He did. And then in season two, when he came back and Mutiny had just started and they had their issues and everybody, you know, quit, everybody dropped out of Mutiny, out of the gaming thing. He's the one who went door to door and got every single one of them back.
He does he's like the, I'll do whatever I need to do to make the thing work, to keep the ship together.
Yeah, and he is the great communicator, I think they're showing us.
So Gordon tells that late night crew now about Joe and his life with Joe and how Joe reversed the Sonorous code and how he turned it into his security software at McMillan Security and then jumped in, and because he had that piece of technology or piece of software, got $10 million in financing. And he tells these guys, Joe's a drug that makes you feel like the most important person in the world until he slits your neck later on.
Yep.
Joe, I mean, there are guys like Joe in the world that you can look at him that way, but they also move shit forward. I mean, Joe's a pretty strong representative of Steve Jobs in the rest of this episode one and two. He
sure
moved a lot of stuff forward, and he was an asshole. And I think that's what the message is about Joe. So Gordon can either be positive about that or negative, and he's totally negative about it.
Yeah, and again, I'm not sure what Gordon wants, because that's perfect the way you just said that. Joe does move things forward. Gordon had this in his hand, but he didn't. I think Gordon is the genius, but Joe is the visionary. And together, can you imagine what a team like that could do? But for some reason, Joe just can't seem to maintain any relationship that he has. And I thought it was really interesting where Gordon says, Joe is brilliant. Don't underestimate him. That's when he's the most dangerous. I thought that was
according to Gordon, though. Gordon has totally spun this into his version of how Joe screwed Gordon.
Yes, here. But also, Cameron feels the same way about him. His wife felt the same way about him. He screwed over his wife's father. And, you know, with definite reasons for doing it. But it just seems like he is just a steamroller who just rolls over everybody, even the people who he has this relationship with.
But this comment by Gordon is more reflective of who Gordon is more than who Joe is. Gordon is everything about, like, how does this affect me? What does this mean to me? How does this help me find my meaning in life? This guy screwed me. This guy took this from me. Otherwise, I'd be here. This guy owes me that. It's me, me, me. It's less of a statement about Joe than it is about himself, I think.
I can definitely get behind that. I think his feelings are hurt. I think his feelings are hurt at Mutiny because he's not respected. And I think his feelings are hurt with Joe because he feels like Joe. Well, I mean, Joe never really acted like he respected him. Well, I'm not going to say never. He did, but for the most part, you know, I don't know.
So next meeting, Donna and Cameron. Donna's now reading the chat room scripts to see why people leave the site, see why people leave specific rooms.
Yep.
And Cameron tells her of the meeting with the joystick dad guy, but kind of lies about the reason she left, that he's just a creep.
Yeah, she didn't tell her the truth at all. Was that because she didn't want her to know that she was, like, caught and that Ryan was right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just think how much more information these people would all have if they just all told the truth.
Like, right.
I read the chats. I met this guy. I was fucked up, and I said that I heard his son was a 49ers fan. He knew I cheated and read the chats and hacked. If they all just knew that, they just admitted that.
Right.
That's why I say it's kind of surprising that Donna is trying to say, don't do this, it's against policy, but then here she is doing it herself. And it would be good strategy for a business to do it. But it does tell them a lot, this stuff. Like, they start to call it transactional interactions, essentially making the deal online. Don't go to a meeting and buy the stuff. Make the deal online. It's a whole new business opportunity. It's the eBay and maybe the PayPal. Because if you have the eBay, you need the PayPal. You need the way to pay. You need the commerce exchange to happen.
Right.
And anything that's got money exchanging and products and services exchanging is golden to a company because they can take a little piece of it.
Sure.
And in this sense, Michelle, they're stumbling into the future. They're finding these pathways of business by mistake. Because if we remember, Mutiny was a gaming company. Then it was a community. It was like chat rooms. Then it was like people talking about things outside of the gaming in the chat rooms. And now it might be commerce. E-commerce. None of this was mapped out or planned out. It's the thing that leads to the thing. They keep finding the new things. It's not the computer. It's the stuff the computer can do.
Right, right.
And even Jamie and I do Mr. Robot, and even in Mr. Robot, they talk about this part of life where you stumble into the future. You don't really know. You just stumble ahead and take what life brings you. You're stumbling into the future. That's kind of what they're doing here.
Sure, yeah.
All right, so next scene, Stone Gordon pops in on Donna and Cameron.
Yes, he does.
Donna doesn't tell Gordon all the ideas, so he's not part of the inner circle in this mutiny company by any means. He is a drifting soul. He has no anchor, has no home base.
And he knows. He knows he's not. Because he asks if they're working, and Donna's kind of, and he's like, never mind. He knows. And that makes him, it hurts his feelings. This whole thing is about Joe or Gordon's hurt feelings, kind of.
He's not one of the queens of the jungle, for sure.
Well,
he's on the outside. He's a monkey. All right, Donna warns Cameron not to hack anymore and to close the back door. It's like, okay, we've learned what we could from this. Let's just use it.
Mm-hmm.
Close the back door in the code. So then she meets Gordon, and she says, you smell like Berkeley. She knows he's, like, wasted.
Yep.
And then they hear the digital handshake of Cameron's modem in the basement.
Yep.
Whatever back room she's in. With Joni, by the way. She's doing that in the bunk room with Joni, trying to sleep?
Probably. It looks like it, yeah. I mean, I didn't see. She definitely had a computer in the bedroom. We saw that, so I don't know.
All right, we'll see Joe McMillan now, full-fledged Joe-ness here at the meeting.
Yep.
McMillan Utility is very similar to like an Apple Developers Conference. If you ever watch their, they always have videos of when Steve Jobs and leads the yearly conference. But they make a very direct parallel to Steve and Joe. And his voice is the prophet, underscores several scenes as they pop away from this meeting a couple times.
Yep.
He says really profound sounding things like, how sure is your footing? We live in a world constantly shifting, pulling us apart, putting us together. He's like making this connection to the earthquake that just happened.
Yeah.
Who are your friends and who are your enemies? And the secret of existence is to have no fear at all. All underscoring scenes of Bosworth and Donna and a couple other things. I can't remember.
Yeah, but important stuff. You know, we find out that the baby's name is named after Boz, right? They named the baby Samuel John. So that's an important thing. I mean, it like kind of knocks him backward when he hears it. He like has this moment of really, wow. And then symbolically, you know, Donna gets up from the bed and the window from that earthquake, the window's broken. It's a, you know, it was bad enough to break the window.
And yeah, I think that's there's nothing.
Some symbol. Well, yeah, Mr. California guy, that would be horrifying to me.
I totally missed the scene, the message about Bosworth's grandson being named after him, though. I must have missed that.
Yeah. Well, he is in his office and he's listening to a message that his son had called and left him. And that's where he tells him that they named him. And it wasn't that Boz wasn't connected enough with his son to know the name. It was that they hadn't named the child, I think. And then they had finally decided on the name and named him Samuel John, which of course is, you know, John Bosworth. And he was just, you know, blown away. So he's got that connection, you know, even if it is convoluted or kind of, you know, in chaos a little bit, we see all these connections except with Gordon. Gordon is the one, I think, that's floundering. Well, and Joe, but, you know, we expect that.
Yeah, without resolution. So it's pretty good storytelling to show people having these concerns and doubts, and then they get resolved, and except one guy doesn't get his resolved.
Right.
Makes it stand out more. So Joe shows this empty glass box, which I guess is to symbolize it's good to know nothing's there, no fear. There's nothing in the box. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Okay, that's good. I really could not put any symbolism on that box. I had no idea what he was trying to
say. I think that's what it means. Like, with this, you don't have to worry. With my software, nothing will be hiding in your system.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's a good one. Nothing is hiding here. Yeah, okay.
Or it's transparent. You can see, you know, I don't know. It seemed to be like a good thing that the box was empty.
Sure.
So he's been selling this corporate version of his software security, and now, tomorrow, he's releasing the user version, the consumer version, for free. And the crowd cheers, and we see Ryan is sitting in on this meeting.
And Ross, that reporter.
Yeah. But I think more importantly, Ryan. Ryan's like pursuing Joe and what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that's it for the first episode, Michelle, from Tennessee.
That's it.
Valley of the Heart's Delight. Now, the valley, I guess, is the Silicon Valley. Heart's Delight, I don't know what, but maybe that's where you go to find all your happiness.
It's actually, there was a place called Valley of the Heart's Delight. It's in Santa Clara, just south of San Jose. And it was kind of interesting because there was a true story, a movie based on a true story about the last lynching, which was set in 1933 in San Jose, and it was by the same name, Valley of the Heart's Delight. So the last lynching, wonder if that had something to do with it. Wonder if they went that deep into it, because that could be interesting. Also, there's a beer called Valley of the Heart's Delight, and it's brewed there. And using like evidently like it's this little valley with these they grow like a lot of fruit, so they make this beer that's supposed to be like this really interesting beer.
Yeah, they grow. I mean, California grows more produce and fruit and everything than anywhere else in the world.
I'm gonna have to try to find that beer because that will be interesting to try that.
All right, well, good research, Michelle.
Oh, thank you.
That's why you're my number one partner in this. So that's it for 301. 302 next time is One Way or Another. And
yep.
Do you have any final thoughts on 301 before we sign off?
Nope, I think that's about it.
All right, Michelle, how do people reach you on the internet?
On Twitter, I'm at Michelle from TN.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets, and this is West Coast Project and our podcast for Halt and Catch Fire. So, Michelle, see you next time on One Way or Another.
See you then, Mike.